information from around the nation. It's the 411. We're sharing a case. What a way to make your day.
I listen to What's the 411 with the dynamic and gorgeous Sharon Kay.
Now, coming from a diva, I will accept that. I certainly will. My queen, my news queen, Queen B. Hello, Nashville, all of the lovely, lovely people. It is another unusual weather day. We just go from one end to the next. Was it like 70 yesterday?
Oh, last Monday, I think.
No, it was yesterday.
Was it yesterday?
Yes.
Or was it Monday?
It was. I'm saying it was yesterday. Okay, just go with me. Yeah. It was yesterday. I tell you it was.
Yeah.
And it is cold this morning.
Yes, it is.
You know, I was just like, what in the world? You just don't not know how to dress. You know, you bust out there thinking one thing, and you freeze.
Yep.
I'm like, what? Oh, we have had a knee-jerking weather here. Oh, for sure. But no rain. So that's really good to see, because we certainly did have plenty yesterday. And, of course, that flood advisory is in effect for the rest of the week, because showers will be coming back tonight, tomorrow, and tomorrow night. So areas prone to flooding. Some still have water around now. Just going to continue to rise a bit for you. So that advisory stays in effect until the Sunday, and about 6 o'clock is so all day, and the weekend is going to have probably chances for that. And if you live near around or near Stones River in the Donaldson area, they said that there's elevated levels, and that's on one of the services, that there are areas there elevated. So you keep that in mind if that's near where you are. And the Cumberland River always seems elevated. So, I mean, it just seems that way. And that's mostly primarily Nashville, Davidson County. And that's how it's looking for us as the rivers in our area begin to rise a bit. And, of course, out there in the Harpeth River, which is always in the rising of Bellevue and things of that nature. So the same areas continue to be the same all the time, and the excessive runoff. So that's how it's looking. We'll talk more about that later. News from the community today? Yes, I have. Actually, news from the community is education and education. And I'm going to start with the K-12 information from Nashville, Davidson County, from Makita Watson. She heads up the Metro Nashville Public Schools Promising Scholars Summer Learning Program. And Makita, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm excited because, you know, I get to talk to two educators. Right, you and then a professor from Fisk. So, you know, it's hey for education today. Now, you have a wonderful program and a registration deadline that's coming for the summer. So tell us what the deadline is and all about the excellent program.
Yes, so we are excited to offer Promise and Scholars again for our families. The deadline to register is March the 22nd. It's a great opportunity for students to get caught up on academically and then also just increase their learning and skills. We have a wide range of things that students will participate in, including math, ELA, physical activity, a lot of hands-on learning at nearly 50 or at 59, nearly 60 sites across the district.
60, that is great. And will there be lunch and et cetera there? And, you know, in case there's that issue and also the transportation, how will that be handled?
So it is a full day for our elementary and middle school students, and we will provide transportation and as well as breakfast and lunch. High school students, we have a half day scheduled for them to allow them the opportunity to work afterwards, and we will provide breakfast and lunch and transportation for high school students as well. And this is the entire month of June, and the program will run from June 2nd through June 30th.
Okay, so for parents that may have been concerned last year, you know, with the children being out and all during the height of the pandemic, this will be a good opportunity for them to get their child in this program, right?
Definitely. It's a great opportunity. We encourage families to take advantage of it, and we want every student who wants to participate to be able to attend. This is really, really a really great opportunity for students to get caught up academically and just increase the skills that they're working on during the school year.
And this, with this program being 28 days, is it going to be repeated again? You know, because if you don't jump on and you just hear about it late, are you out of luck on this? Because the parents have to find places for their students to go during the summer.
So we are only offering it for the 4 weeks during the month of June, similar to what we offered last year. We want to allow our staff and our families an opportunity to participate in other summer learning experiences the month of July, but then also allowing our staff the opportunity to participate in professional development and prepare for the start of the school year.
Okay, and do the parents get to pick what they want their child to participate in, or is it a pre-done curriculum? How are you all working that?
So for our elementary and middle school students, they focus primarily on math, physical activity, English, language arts, and STREAM, which is your science, technology, engineering, math. And for our high school students, it's a really great opportunity, especially those students who are current eighth graders and will be ninth graders next year. We have some additional transition support for them to get them acclimated to being in high school. It's really focused on college and career, ACT prep, a lot of hands-on opportunity for them to really get exposed to a variety of careers and professions and professionals, and so it's really, really great, and that's, again, a half day. Our elementary and middle school students, full day, a lot of academics, but a lot of fun, hands-on, enriching experiences for students to participate in, and partners supporting that as well.
Now, this is for, from what I understand, is for students who will be entering kindergarten. So this would be their first experience with the kindergarten experience?
Yes, so this we are accepting students who are rising grades K through 12. Mm-hmm. And so this could be the first experience for some of our kindergarten students who maybe did not attend a pre-K program. It's a great opportunity for them to get adjusted and familiar with that school prior to starting in August.
Well, that to me makes sense, perfectly good sense. So there won't be a freak out when the time comes. And I don't know if it comes from the students or from the parents.
Maybe both.
Yeah, I'm certain. I am absolutely certain. And all the learning programs will be taught by Metro school teachers, correct?
Yes, so our Metro teachers are teaching, and we have lower ratios, so we have an average of 1 to 13. The students are really receiving a lot of individualized support, smaller group setting, and our teachers, and we have an administrator in every building, counselors and social workers. We're providing a lot of SEL support to our students during that time as well.
Okay, excellent. Are there, because it's just a 28-day period, there is no extra activities outside of just going outside and having a good time, right?
So some of our sites will offer aftercare where students can participate or have a place to stay after our program ends, which for elementary school, the day ends at 3, and for middle school, it ends at 4 o'clock. But students will participate in a lot of just really hands-on, engaging, fun activities during that time.
Okay. So there won't be any chance of boredom for them.
No.
Yeah. They'll have an opportunity also to interact with other students, and that'll be really good for them. So, again, give the dates of the deadline and when the program begins. What do they need to have? Do parents need to have, you know, anything special that they need to equip the students with to attend this, Makeda?
No, we are prepared and have everything we need to be able to accept families. If families have questions, they are welcome to visit the website, or they can email promisingscholars@mmps.org. We have a team who's there and able to assist parents with any questions that they might have. The program, again, runs from June 2nd through June 30th, and the last day to register is March 22nd.
And is there a total number that you're going to accept?
And we want to accept every student who wants to attend.
Oh, okay.
That is the goal.
Okay. Well, I hope you all don't wait till the last minute. And that's why I wanted you to be on, like, soon, to give people time to work it out in their minds. And, you know, maybe the closer we get to that deadline. Makeda, I have your number so I can call you back. And so we can remind them one more time, okay?
That would be great. Thank you.
And give the website for sign up.
So families can visit mmps.org, and once they go to MMPS, there is a Promising Scholars banner that they can click on. It will give them an overview, some big key buckets about the program, and then also the link to register to sign their child up. And again, registration is through March the 22nd.
Excellent. Thank you so much for giving us our news from the community for our Metro School students. And if you have any concerns or whatever, go to the website, check it out, and find out all about the program. Thank you very much, and I hope that you have a good rest of the day, and I appreciate your service to educate our children.
Thank you, you too.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye.
All right, so parents, that's a good one for you. You have, you know, worried about the kids. You all been, you know, really talking a lot of stuff about, well, there's a program for you to put the students in to get extra time to, you know, be with the family and school family and more teacher time and more time. That's what you all have asked for. So you have it. And no excuses. You got to be careful what you ask for and get the children in the programs. And make sure they don't miss that extra opportunity in case you say they are behind. This will be a good one for you. Now, the today's news from the community is education-based. I just went education crazy here. We went from K to 12 to higher ed. And I am happy to have on a member of the Fisk family, and it's been a couple of months since I talked to anybody from internally here on the campus. Dr. Patrick Rasico is going to give us our news from the Fisk campus. And Dr. Rasico, how are you today?
I am doing quite well. Thank you so much. It's an absolute pleasure to be on.
Oh, thank you. Now, I heard, and tell me if this is true, that your mother is a professor here, too.
Well, yes. I have actually had ties to Fisk for quite some time. So it's really great to be not just a part of some, you know, part of the Fisk family, but to have really known many persons at Fisk for many years.
Now, what does your mother teach?
She is actually a professor of Spanish. She's been at Fisk for quite some time before I was on the scene here at Fisk.
That's your mama. Oh my gosh, that is hysterical. I see her when we have like different trainings and things, and you know, when we were together in the Jubilee Hall or, you know, Appleton Room, and I would see her. And yeah, over the years, she's been here a long time. Well, I'm happy to. I guess it wasn't a hard choice for you to decide where you wanted to get some education and also to work academically.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure to be at Fisk for the last, this is my third year. I was an Andrew Mellon postdoctoral fellow at Fisk University in the Department of History and Political Science for 2 years after I completed my doctorate at Vanderbilt. And I have been a professor of history, tenure-track professor of history, at Fisk University since last August. So it's been very nice to remain a part of Fisk's intellectual community.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, maybe one day I'll get to see you face-to-face.
Indeed.
You know, we don't see much of each other anymore as we used to, but hopefully soon. Now, for many years on the show, every year when it was time for the Pearson Lecture Series, I would have the information from the campus from Dr. Reverend Mitchell. And when Dr. Mitchell passed, the series didn't die. Lecture series, it continues on. And the series is now called Pearson Mitchell, in honor of also Dr. Revis Mitchell, the late Dr. Revis Mitchell. I think that is beautiful. So, and I know his family is immensely proud. And he really did. Every year, this was a big thing for him to put together the lecture series. And he loved talking about it. So, Patrick, you have been nominated to do that today. And it's part of the History and Political Science Department. That's what you're going to do for us, because you are the presenter. And we'll be looking forward to... We're going to take a break, though, first, Professor. And on the other side of the break, we're going to come back and have you tell us a little bit about Pearson and Mitchell and how the lecture series came to be. And then what you will be talking about on Monday, February 28th, the last day of Black History Month. So you stay right there, okay?
Sounds good.
All right, we're going to get that Take You Home traffic report, and you all know it was wall-to-wall and treetop tall in that traffic last night. I'm like, there's no way to go to get out of here. It's backed up everywhere. And knowing that that's the case, hopefully, because it's not any precipitation coming down at this minute, it won't be as bad as it was last night. It was terrible. Anyway, but that's what it's like in a growing city. So we're going to hear from Commander Chuck and see how the roads are looking in and around the mid-state area. Let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Good afternoon. The moving a stalled truck 65 northbound in Long Hollow Parkway. It's got got it crazy slow trying to get up towards Goodlettsville this afternoon. Busy on the South Loop. Again, allow yourself extra time. This traffic report brought to you by PensacolaBeach.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Support for WFSK comes from the Frist Art Museum, presenting On the Horizon, contemporary Cuban art from the Perez Art Museum, Miami. An exhibition that explores the diverse culture and political landscapes of Cuba and its diaspora through the paintings, photographs, sculptures, and videos of 50 artists of different generations. Drawn from one of the largest public collections of Cuban art in the U.S., On the Horizon is on view through May 1st. The Frist is open Thursdays through Sundays, and you can find out more about all the exhibitions and programs at fristartmuseum.org. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All righty, Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And at 4:30, by happenstance, more education news. I don't know how it worked out like that. I'll be talking with Lisa Stafford from the HBCU campus in Texas, Prairie View A&M. And she is the special collections librarian there. As one of my Black History Month guests, to talk about tracing your ancestry and some of the things that we'll be chatting about during the time that I have her on at 4:30. Now with me is Dr. Patrick Rasico, and he is Assistant Professor of History here at Fisk. And in the Pearson Mitchell Lecture Series, Dr. Brevis Mitchell, as I mentioned, this was his very important program that he always loved to talk about every year. And it's things like that I miss, but I see that it still goes on and carries on even though he's gone home to the Lord. Now, who's Pearson? And tell the audience, in case they're not familiar with Dr. Brevis Mitchell.
Certainly. It's a pleasure to speak of them. And while I will say, unfortunately, I never had the opportunity to know Dr. Pearson, I will say that I've heard some wonderful things about him, his scholarship, and his commitment to Fisk University over the years prior to his passing in the late 1990s. He, along with Dr. Jim Quirin and Dr. Revis Mitchell, were very dedicated to promoting history and showcasing the scholarship that members of Fisk's faculty were producing. And particularly, they wanted to make sure that there was a lecture series that allowed for a venue in which scholars associated with Fisk could talk about the history of Nashville, the history of HBCUs, the history of a lot of other questions that related to very important matters relating to African-American history and ultimately the history of Fisk itself. And so after the passing of Professor Pearson, we have this lecture series that was formed, given his name in his honor. And after the passing of Dr. Mitchell, about not quite 2 years ago, we have then Dr. Mitchell's name being attached to this as well. Dr. Pearson had been at Fisk for many years, I believe since the 1970s. And so he had over 20 years of experience and commitment to Fisk University as a teacher, as a mentor, as an educator, and as a very astute researcher. And I can say all the same very complimentary things about Dr. Mitchell. I had the pleasure of knowing Dr. Mitchell as a colleague for a couple of years while I was a postdoctoral fellow, but also I had the very great pleasure of knowing him when I was a younger man. And honestly, even before I was an adult, due to, having family members who had ties to the Fisk community. So he was somebody who was very much an inspiration to Fisk students. He taught many courses on African-American history. He was somebody who taught a number of other courses that very much encouraged students to become history majors. And during his time at Fisk University, in addition to being a spectacular teacher, beginning in 1980, he also was somebody who was administrator at Fisk. And while administrator at Fisk, he held several different roles, including being chair of the history department and also as director of institutional advancement and academic dean. He also was a public historian. He was somebody who was very knowledgeable of Nashville's history, and he was very involved in local historical organizations, and he was very committed to making sure that these organizations got the attention that they deserved. And so he was on the Tennessee Historical Commission beginning around 2009, I believe, and he was actually chairman of this Tennessee Historical Commission from 2015 to 2020. And he was also the vice president of the Tennessee Historical Society. So his loss was very much felt by many people who were very dedicated and interested in Nashville's history and African-American history and U.S. history in general.
Well, and knowing that that's the case, then people that love history and want to know more about it, this would be the ideal thing for them. And your presentation tomorrow, next week, Dr. Rasico, is on the Jubilee Singers, correct?
Absolutely. And I have constructed a project in which I'm discussing a little-known chapter in the history of the Jubilee Singers. Mm-hmm. All of the work that had been done on much of the Jubilee Singers had been about their early history, their formation in the 1870s, and the first incarnation of the Jubilee Singers as they raised money for Fisk and as they very much helped Fisk weather those shaky early years. However, there was a period that scholars really have not covered, and that was after the dissolution of the first Jubilee Singer troupe. There was a period in which several of the Jubilee Singers did not have the approval, actually, of Fisk University to continue on as the Fisk Jubilee Singers. And so there was this about 25-year period, in which several of the former Jubilee Singers decided they were going to travel the world and actually promote Fisk University, raise money for Fisk University, and raise awareness for African-American spirituals the world over. And so the leader of this troupe that had formed after the original troupe leader, George White, had resigned, a guy by the name of Frederick Loudon, he reformed the Fisk Jubilee Singers, and he traveled throughout the United States, Canada, and Britain. And beginning in 1884, he led the Fisk Jubilee Singers for another tour of the United Kingdom. And then from there, in 1886, after 2 years in Great Britain, they began a completely overshadowed portion of the Jubilee Singers' history. Their time in Australia, New Zealand, and India. I'm an historian of 18th, 19th century British India. So they were in India during the latter part of the period that I studied. And they spent about 6 months after they had been in Australia for almost 3.5 years in Sri Lanka, in Calcutta, in several cities in the northern Indian district of Uttar Pradesh, and then in southern India before they then stopped in Burma on their way back to the United States. And that is going to be the subject which I'm going to cover, that six-month period that has been so overshadowed but is so important in understanding the history of the Fisk Jubilee Singers. And their success led to President Cravath saying, you know, we should have a Jubilee Singers troupe. So if it were not for their success, there might not even be a Fisk Jubilee Singers troupe that existed in the 20th century.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
So this, as they've celebrated their 150th, this is important information for people to know the facts on the history. Because everybody gets to spinning up stuff and they don't know the truth and the facts and everything. So hearing the lecture, I know it's not open yet to the public over there at the Appleton, but you're doing it on Zooming online?
That is correct.
Okay. And how can one participate? What time on the 28th and all that?
Yes, it is at 7 p.m. on the 28th, and unfortunately, due to COVID, as you said, it has to be online. So a Zoom link has been sent around by the head of the library, Dr. Brandon Owens. And if you will follow the Zoom link that is linked in the advertisement, you should be admitted, and I hope that you would be able to enjoy the lecture.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Dr. Rasico, and I look forward to, now that I know how to get you from the history department, and if I can't find you, I'll track your mom down.
Indeed.
You know, sometimes people get busy and all. I just say, oh, just got to see if I can reach his mom. So, you know, you got to work however you can in this business to get plus stuff done. But anyway, thank you so much and for giving us our news from the campus and from the community, okay?
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
All right. Have a good day.
Thank you. You as well.
Bye. Now, we're going to shift gears out of Nashville and go straight to Texas and talk with a fellow HBCU. So we're talking HBCU to HBCU. And how rare is that? I want to welcome today Lisa Stafford. She is the Special Collection Librarian at Prairie View A&M University. And Lisa, how are you today?
I'm just fine, Sharon. How are you today?
I'm so happy to have you on. And as I remind the audience, it's not very often HBCUs talk to each other on radio. And we must do better as institutions. We simply must. And we do our part here. And when I saw that you all had the beautiful workshops and things that you were doing and helping assist people, I thought that would be an excellent tool for folks that may be doing searching. Sometimes during Black History Month, everybody wants to know their roots from whence they've come. And some people have been looking for years. But I wanted to spend a little bit of time with you all talking about that. And before I go straight to that subject, in my conversation with you yesterday, I did discover that Prairie View A&M was one of the HBCUs across the nation, one of the number is now up to 57 institutions, by the way, America. And your institution was one of the ones in the early month of January that received a bomb threat. And can you just give us a moment to, you know, just talk about that for a second? And
sure.
And how it went down there.
Yes, so that is correct. And again, thank you for this opportunity to speak HBCU to HBCU. And greetings from Texas to all those listening to this radio program today. But in early January, somewhere around the 5th, maybe the 6th of January, we received a notification that we needed to evacuate the campus, and it was due to a bomb threat that had been called in to our, I believe, our police station. So, of course, they took that seriously, and they evacuated the campus on that day. Luckily, nothing was located, but the caller had said that there were bombs set to go off in various buildings. So I work in the library and work in the largest building in terms of the tallest building, 5 floors, on the campus. So naturally, it would take the police and the security time to go through each building to make sure there wasn't anything hidden in any of those buildings. But luckily, the students had not returned to the campus at that time. It was only faculty and staff on the campus at that time, and a few students, maybe some of the athletes and maybe some of the band members. But we were able to quickly evacuate the campus, and there was no injuries or harm done to anyone.
Excellent. And you all, I know, have stayed paying very close attention to the number, and it's stacked up because it's up to 57 now, and there's 104 schools, and we still have a few more days left in Black History Month. And, you know, I just want the FBI to apprehend these people and bring this to an end, because it certainly has gone on too long from January 4th up until the 16th. And we got our threat here at Fisk University on Valentine's Day. So it marches on. And every institution you will talk with, a lot of them across the country have similar experiences. So I think the, you know, the HBCU family, alumni, staff, students, faculty, and communities just need to keep each other lifted in prayer. Because this, you know, you just simply do not know. And the FBI has said in a communication today that these threats are coming by phone, email, or instant messages, or even on online post. If you see someone out there online or doing whatever you're doing, say something. Please say something. If you see, hear, read, or whatever, say something. And if you know who these persons of interest are, say something. And because the FBI says they do have folks of interest in this. And it will be interesting to see as this develops, because the threats have been coming now for 7 weeks. And it is for each school a very frightening experience. Because you just...
The other thing I would say about that is that when you've received a threat, take it seriously.
Absolutely.
Because there have been probably some incidences where there has been something found. But we should take it seriously when those threats come.
Absolutely. And and when you do are concerned enough, as we all are, and you don't say something, you know, that's not helpful for anyone. So no matter what community you're listening in, either here in Nashville or Prairie View, Texas, or the Global Family listening worldwide at WFSKFM.org, we would like to see this come to an end. 57 institutions. That's 57 and too many. Okay, we're going to take a time out, come back on the other side. I'm going to finish talking with Lisa Stafford. She is the Special Collections Librarian at Prairie View A&M University in Prairie View, Texas. Go Prairie View! Go Prairie View! Go Prairie View! Anyway, we're going to take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411? Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810. 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Absolutely. Just moved that crash. 65 northbound at Long Hollow Pike is still crazy slow trying to get up into Goodlettsville. Heavy traffic right now. 24 east headed out towards Murfreesboro. This traffic report brought to you by PensacolaBeach.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Support for WFSK comes from the United Way of Greater Nashville. Don't pay to have your taxes filed. United Way's Vita-Free Tax Prep Program can help. Visit UnitedWayFileFree.com or call 211 to have your taxes filed in person or virtually by IRS-certified preparers. That's UnitedWayFileFree.com or 211.
This weekend, the for Fat Tuesday on Blues Time in the City, the late, great New Orleans legend, Carol Friend.
Shaking his head with his hair at the time.
Shaking his head and his hair. That's Carol Friend, and she's talking this weekend. And Bojack will perform one of his past performances live. Join me, Rosina Bailey, the happiest band in America, for Blues Time in the City this weekend right here. Catch Blues Time in the City Sundays from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on Jazzy 88.
Support for WFSK comes from the Scrimmerhorn Symphony Center. Grammy-winning vocalist Gregory Porter and his band return to the Scrimmerhorn Symphony Center on Monday, February 28th. Recognized for his captivating baritone voice, the soulful singer and musical storyteller is known for hits like Hey Laura and Liquid Spirit.
Hey Laura, it's me. Unreroute the rivers, let the damned water feed. There's some people down the way that's thirsty, so let the liquid spirit breathe.
An evening not to miss. Show is at 8 p.m. Get your tickets at NashvilleSymphony.org. Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, in Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. We thank you so very much for supporting What's the 411. Now, you just heard about the Gregory Porter event on the 28th, and we will be giving away some tickets to see him. Okay, coming soon. And that is something for you all that love him and his music to look forward to. Now, right at this moment, we're talking Black History today with Lisa Stafford. She is a special collections librarian at Prairie View A&M University. And before I have you talk about Prairie View for a minute or so, could you, do you know folks here at Fisk? I think you know a couple people here, right?
Yes, I do. I know your special collections librarian that's over at the Franklin Center, Ms. Delisa, and I shout out to her.
Delisa Harris. Let's give Delisa a hand because she volunteered for us at the Radiothon. We love
yes.
you. Yes, and so did one of the staff over there. What's our intern? Graham, last name Graham.
Charles
Graham. And there's some great people over there.
So we fellow archivists have to stick together, especially
as
African American ones.
That's right.
And I also want to shout out to Dr. Crystal DeGregory, who heads up the HBCU Story Project. And last but not least, my nephew at Vanderbilt University, Torrin Stafford.
All right, over the down the street and around the corner. I hope you told him to listen to you today.
Yes, I did.
Okay, and he better be, so we'll quiz him and see how he does. Now, you all have quite a historic institution, 1876, and student population. And what's your specialization?
So our enrollment at the moment is about 9,500 or so, give or take some due to COVID. Our specialization, we specialize in producing African-American engineers, mm-hmm. architects, and nurses, business professionals, and, teachers. And our school was founded on agricultural principles as well as It was the first university in the state of Texas, public institution in the state of Texas, that served the African-American community to produce teachers. So we are the second oldest public institution in the state of Texas, but Prairie View is the first co-educational institution in the state of Texas. We admitted women in 1879. Our sister school, Texas A&M, actually our system school, Texas A&M didn't start admitting women until 1960. So we have the distinction of being the oldest public institution in the state of Texas to admit women.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. And that's things that I hope the community knows. There's a move on around the country to revise our history, and so that the stories don't get told like they should. But we're going to tell them. You're not revising this. I speak regularly to historians and archivists and people who set the record straight and researchers, because I if the truth is going to set us free, then I want to be free indeed. Now, you all have been doing a Unlock Hereditary Mysteries at your facility, and I understand that it's very popular. So I'm like, okay, we need to hear about that in Nashville. And who got it started?
Well, there is definitely been a resurgence of interest in African American history and genealogy, you know, thanks to Dr. Henry Louis Gates with the Finding Your Roots series, as well as here on the campus. We recently launched the Ruth J. Simmons Center for Race and Justice. So that launched just about a year ago during COVID, and there has been research that's coming out of that center that centers on discovering who the early settlers of Prairie View or Waller County were. And we've interested the students to the point that they want to do their own genealogies and find their own ancestry. So that's been a bonus that we weren't necessarily counting on, but that has been great for them to have an interest in their own ancestry so that they can find out who they are and whose they are.
Amen. To me, that seems like a very confidence builder and a self-esteem builder, too, I think.
Yes, it really is. And Prairie View being what it is, as it's a legacy school, because there are so many generational students that are here that have had relatives that attended here in the past, either their parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, sisters, or brothers. And our family is one of those. We are products of two HBCU families. So shout out to Tuskegee Institute, which it was called that when my mother attended there. And then our father was a Prairie View graduate. So both our parents were HBCU products, and we want the legacy families to understand the importance of knowing your history, as well as students that we have here that are first generation. If they're the first generation in their family, even in 2022, we are, you know, wanting them to build that legacy for the future for them, for themselves and their families. So we assist in helping them root out their genealogy. And, you know, we tell them to, you know, the first thing we say is list what you know and start with yourself. If you don't know anybody else to start with when you're doing your genealogy, just start with yourself and go out from there. You know, if you ask a student of a certain age, maybe 18 or so, who are your people? You know, where do you come from? And they might mention their mom, their dad, their grandparents, and that might be all they know. And they don't know you know, the generation that might have been enslaved.
Right.
So we helped them find those records in the census records, in databases that are free to for them to use on the campus. There's a portion of Ancestry that is free, but there's also a product that's in academic institutions called Heritage Quest. Mm-hmm. But you can go to your public library and get help with genealogy. There are genealogy classes you can take, but start with yourself and then find the oldest relative in your family to interview that person. When you're at family gatherings, you should have a recorder of some kind with you when you speak to an elderly relative, because they'll remember things that they may just remember it for that time, but you want to record that. And just ask them, has anybody taken your, you know, oral history? Mm-hmm. And you could be the first one in your family to get the oral history, because as we know, Sharon, people are leaving this earth every day, and you don't know when the opportunity will present itself, but you don't also know when the opportunity might be taken away.
And you know, one of the sad parts about this is when you don't know, you're around them and you squander that opportunity, but then when you do find out about them and things about family, great uncles and aunts and grandparents and great-greats, you know, you're in awe that these people did great things or went through whatever they went through, and you just feel so proud at that point. So no one can tell you anything that would have you not knowing that your family represents a lot here in America. And I think that that hurts people that don't, you know, have a clear grasp as they try to erase our history and say we can't talk about it. And but I think that the worst thing we could possibly do, Lisa, is not find out more about our own people and their story.
Right. So, and this is really something you can leave on the table for the future generation.
That's right.
And I want to have one more shout out. My son, who's 14 years old, is here in the studio with me listening. His name is Tyler Stafford.
Hey.
And he's... Hey, hi.
Hello.
So
he sees me doing... Oh, wow. He sees me doing genealogy, and I encourage him to read bios from some of our relatives, grandfather, his great-grandfather.
Yeah.
And I mentioned our connection to Prairie View and our HBCU connection. For Prairie View, our family has about 115-year connection to Prairie View because my grandmother went here in the 20s.
Uh-huh.
And prior to her coming here to Prairie View, her older siblings, a brother and two sisters, had come here in the early 1900s.
Uh-huh.
So we're 100-something years in our affiliation with Prairie View, and it continues. And it's important to me, and, you know, it's important to me and my siblings to pass this information on to the next generation, like my son and my nephew, who hopefully is listening.
Absolutely.
And my other nieces and nephews, so that they can know the history and pass that legacy on. And it does start with getting them interested in doing some research on their family.
Well, I guess that's one of the questions I have. Are you encouraging the young ones to, because, you know, some of them, they're not interested. You know, this is not, I don't, you know, I'm trying to live for now. I don't have time for these old people and all this old stuff, or they're dead or whatever. So whatever people would say. But how have your children saw you in action, your family? But how can a parent, you know, get their young person to think more conscientiously about from whence they've come?
Well, I think it kind of starts just with a conversation. Something as simple as just whatever their talent is, you know, like we have musical, I have musical nieces and nephews in my family, and, you know, it's like, are there good athletes? And they're like, you know who else was a good athlete in the family? And then you start with that, you know, kind of conversation. So you meet them at the point where they are, something that they're interested in,
right.
Music or sports or writing, you know, and you try to connect them to an ancestor that they might go and want to find more information out about. But like I said, you know, they could start right there at their own, in their own family, you know, find out a little bit more about your mom or your dad.
Yeah. Well, and too, Lisa, a lot of times parents themselves, they don't know. Because, you know, they didn't, weren't interested or whatever. So you might have to check with auntie or grandfather or somebody that, you know, and hopefully they'll want to take an interest, because that is so important to the future for our students and young people and just African Americans, period, to know facts and to know truth so they won't fall for this stuff that's
going on. Well, one of the things that we do in our family is I love looking at photo albums, old photo albums.
Oh, yeah.
And I can definitely see the family resemblance in my nephews to my father.
Oh, yeah.
They look very much like he did at the same age that they are now. And so you kind of, you know, can start with pictures.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can start with, you know, it's not probably, it maybe is morbid to maybe start with an obituary, but that might be a place to start. But you also, within each family, maybe not, I don't know, this generation, maybe not, but there's probably someone in your family that's already started doing some family history. So connecting them with that person, it might not be anybody in your immediate family. It might be an uncle, it might be an aunt, a cousin, you know, and then you connect. We have a cousin in Washington, D.C., Maryland area who's done some genealogy, and we connected with her, and we got a lot of names on that side of the family that we didn't know. And so, you know, you never know who has what. And fortunate, I guess, for us in our family, we have pretty consciously aware young people that are interested in their family, and they want to know more. So, you know, family reunions, have them. A young person could start the family reunion. You know, if they haven't been having them, you know, they could be the ones to initiate. And, of course, during the pandemic, we had probably more family connections through Zoom and emailing and that kind of thing than we probably have ever had. So you can do it, meet them at the point where they are. We know this generation is all technology and, you know, they're not into books and they certainly don't want to go do any research.
Right.
So you have to kind of meet them in the new way that they want to be reached. So technology is great for doing genealogy, and you can find so much more out about your family now than you could even 10 years ago.
That is very, very true. Now, a lot of what you named, and we're just about out of time, these are resources that anyone, anywhere can use online. And I know, you know, everybody does the Ancestry.com and people do the records. But in the presentation that the census records, in the presentation that you all have, you speak on breed books, deed books, slave advertisements, plantation tax rolls, slave master records. So when I have you back on, I want you to talk about that. Because while people try to act like slavery didn't exist, like whatever, we got all kinds of information to inform and educate people with. And we just need them to utilize it and take advantage of what's there. So I'm going to get back with you, Lisa. And so we can go to that particular topic, because I think that would be very, very good to hear more
about. And you are correct on that. Those that you just named, those are topics that we would need to explore a little further. But I think people don't know that maybe in some cases the way to your African American history is through the enslaver, that family, so that you can see those property records, those land transfer deeds, all the kind of deed records there were to see how land transferred into your family. So that is another topic that's very expansive, and I would love to come back and talk to you about that.
Definitely. I really want to know one day between my brother and my cousin and myself, I want to find out who had enslaved my family, and let the white side know. Surprise! Here I am! To me, I'm just really so curious about that. Anyway, Lisa, thank you so much. To find out more about your institution and your special collections library there, what is it on the university website?
The website, yes, you can go to www.pvamu.edu/library and special collections.
Excellent. Well, I will be circling back with you, Lisa, and this has really been a wonderful conversation. Hopefully your son and, is it your nephew?
Nephew, yes.
Nephew and son were listening. And I don't want them to tell you that, I forgot. There's no excuses.
Well, again, thank you, Sharon, for the opportunity to speak today on your program. And everyone, get out there and do some research on your family.
That's right. Lisa Stafford of Prairie View A&M University in Prairie View, Texas. Thank you so much, and you have a good rest of the day.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Don't you all want to know from whence you've come? So when you hear all the dumb stuff, the foolishness and the revisions, you can't say this, you can't say that, you can't think this. They're like, you know from whence you came. To me it's like, then that deflates every bit of that stuff. Anyway, let's get the news and come back on the other side at about maybe 10 after or so. I'll be talking to the author next hour for our book for today. So let's take a quick, and you'll have your traffic reports. Let's take a quick time out and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411?